The following interview was recorded by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association as part of the Gawler Oral History Interview Project.
I'm interviewing Lynn Lillicrap on the 25th of October 2019, and my name is Judy Ferguson. Well, hello.
Hello.
Old friend, I've known you for a long time. What we're going to talk about, I think, Lynn, is mainly about your childhood and your sort of young adult years, if that's all right with you.
Mm, that's fine.
Okay, so let's go right back to the beginning.
Right back.
Tell us about when and where you were born and your parents and your family.
I was born in Albury on the Victorian-New South Wales border. It was Albury and Wodonga then. Never the two would meet, but it's Albury-Wodonga now. In July 1945, about 2 weeks before the Pacific War ended, before the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, my mother had married my father, and they'd gone to Albury to live. I'm not sure why Albury, but they settled there. And when I was born, Dad was a truck driver and Mum wasn't working at all. I was born in a private hospital, which about 3 years later was closed down because of unhygienic carryings on. But however, that was probably the standard back in those days and all of that. At about 6 weeks, Mum said that I had a fever, and she'd nursed me through some of it, and then about the third day she noticed I'd just gone very stiff and wondered what was going on, called the doctor. The doctor didn't know, and a couple of days later I started to unstiffen on the top half, and I unstiffened over all my body, but what it did do was leave me with no movement in my legs, or virtually from the waist down. And the problem was diagnosed as being polio. And interestingly enough, I was the only case in Albury at that time. The next case was 8 years later, and the next one about 9 years. So where it came from...
Isn't that unusual?
Yeah, no one seems to know. But there's only been about four cases in Albury in toto. I happened to be the first of them.
And you were 6 weeks old?
About 6 weeks old.
Oh, gosh.
Which is a brilliant time to get it, Judy, because I've never known anything else.
And you don't remember anything, do you?
Well, I don't remember anything about the sickness or anything. And as I say, a brilliant time to get it. Because you just grow up with it. You get on with it.
I guess.
It's like being born without a limb.
Yeah.
You just learn to live with it and get on with it. Mum and Dad traipsed around for a while looking for treatment. I went to the Far West home in Sydney at first, then I went down to Melbourne. And when I was about 18 months old, a doctor down there called Dame Jean McNamara, who was principally a research scientist, discovered that myxomatosis had the same effect on rabbits as polio had on children. And that's why she was awarded her damehood. And so she... As a medical doctor, she transferred across to treating polio victims, or I don't like that word, but never mind.
Yeah.
And at 18 months old, she said, oh yes, no problem, we can get her up walking, and there's no reason why she can't lead a reasonably normal life. And at 18 months old, I was put into long leg calipers, which were only about, less than a foot long.
Tiny, yeah.
And learned to walk in a walking race, and I have a photo of that at home. And then a few months later, after I'd learned to walk in the race, I was put onto elbow length crutches, and I just took off. You just got on with it. I don't have any siblings. The expenses of getting equipment and everything else in those days, there was no government assistance, so I think that had a reasonable result on why there were no siblings.
Sure.
As that turned out, that was probably a good thing too, but that will come a bit later. I had a pretty normal life. If I didn't have my calipers on, I just pulled myself along with my hands around the garden. Dad rigged up a tricycle for me, and whilst I couldn't pedal it, he had a stake on it that he'd pull me along, and I could just go all around the garden. I've got a photo of me sitting in a box that he pulled along while he was gardening, and me watering the garden, and probably Dad too. and all of that. And yeah, so all of those things, I mean, I did what most normal kids do, I suppose. At 3 and a half, Dame Jean decided that it would probably be good for me if I went to preschool, kindergarten, so I did that. And I don't remember much about it other than that I probably had good fun, because that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
And then at 4 and a half, she wrote to the education department and asked could I start school, which normally we didn't do till the beginning of the year, which meant I would have been 5 and a half, because school being five, and she felt that wasn't the right thing for me, that being an only child, I needed to get to school. Also, Mum needed to go back to work to get money to help with equipment. And so, and also too, my father had taught me to all my numbers. I was counting up to 50 by then. I was reading, I was getting books out of the library and reading. So from that point of view, it was probably a good thing. So at 4 and a half, I started at the Aubrey Primary School. And can remember that quite clearly in for some aspects of it. I really enjoyed school, but out the front there was a bar, basically a handrail that ran the length of the path that was in front of the front classrooms. And my legs didn't grow properly. They just didn't grow because of the polio. So I was short enough that I was able to swing on these handrails. That wasn't the right thing to do. And I still remember that. And I could also very easily get onto the monkey bars and the gym and all that, because I could, although I couldn't bend my knees, my legs were short enough that I could get them up there to get onto rungs and climb up and onto seesaws. And that was all good fun. Yeah. And what I couldn't climb on, I pulled myself up on anyhow. And I remember a little bit later on, I climbed up on the roof of the house a few times. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, and finally Dad said, next time you get yourself up there, you will get yourself down. Well, that's all right. I did get myself down.
How old would you have been there?
Oh, probably 5, 6. And I learned many, many, many years later that he didn't like heights. And that's why I had to get myself down.
That's hilarious.
Anyhow, I stayed at Aubrey Primary School, but in those days, Mum and Dad used to take me to school. Dad would take me to school as he went to work for about 8:30. And then from the school to where Mum was working at Coles, which wasn't too far up, I'd walk up there and she'd bring me home because Dad had finished work earlier. But in those days, we didn't have a car, so I sat in wicker basket seats on the back of their bicycles.
Oh, I remember them.
Yes, and my legs would stick out either side of them because I couldn't bend them.
Oh.
But we didn't have a car till I was about, I don't know, 7, I suppose. And that was the way we got round. And at whatever age you could, I think it was about 8, I joined the Brownies. And this will probably amuse you, seeing you know me, I was put in the fairy six. Anyone less likely to be
there
a fairy.
There is a God up there. There is a God up.
Yes, anyone less likely to be a fairy. But anyhow, and on Saturday mornings with a couple of friends, we'd walk about at least 2 miles to Brownies.
Gosh, that's a fair hike for someone in calipers.
But you just did it. Because Mum and Dad weren't going out, they weren't going to work, and we just ambled down and ambled back. And I do remember getting a couple of hidings, though, when I walked in the creek on the way home, simply because my boots were expensive, the ones, the special ones that went onto the calipers. And yes, that wasn't appreciated. But also at school, used to walk down to the corner and catch the school bus. That's when they put a bus service on. But at night time, the bus had let us out on the top of the hill. And our house was halfway between the top of the hill and the end of the street, or the end of the block. And I used to lie down and just roll down. And that was fine, except I had white cuffs and collars on my uniform.
Oh, gosh.
So when Mum made my uniforms, she used to just use poppers, a think they're called press studs.
Yes, yes.
And press stud the cuffs and collars on so that they could come off that night and get the blue bag to get the green stains out. And then I had jobs to do. I was meant to have the vegetables ready in the saucepans for Mum to put on when she on the stove when she got home, have the table set, and a couple of other things that had to be done. And if I didn't get them done, because quite often in summer I just stay outside and play with my friends, and their parents would call them in, and I'd think, whoops, Mum must just about be ready to come home. And if I didn't get inside and get things done, there was a little bit of contention there. But in effect, having said that, my mother these days probably would be held up for child abuse in the way I was disciplined, simply because that was the way she was disciplined.
Yes, indeed.
And that was the way it was, and probably the way her parents were disciplined.
They didn't make any allowances for your disablement, did they, at all?
Probably,
which has probably stood you in good stead, hasn't
it? Yeah, well, my father had a philosophy, and probably not at that age, but certainly later in my life, that this is a cruel world, it's not going to change for you, you have to learn to live in it.
Mm.
And that was the way he raised me.
Mm. Do you have any negative memories of school or teachers?
Yes, bullying.
Or could you
by the kids.
To tell us about that.
And this went on right through my school years. I'd sit at the desk and I'd put my crutches down the side of the desk.
Right.
And many was the time, Judy, when I would go to get my crutches, particularly in high school when you move classrooms, and the crutches had gone.
Aww.
And they'd be dragged along by the one behind me and dragged and out, and
aww,
quite often they were out in the door. In primary school, when that happened, whenever I found them, I used to just belt out with them and hit kids. I was forever up at the principal's office and told I was the bully. But the kids used to take great delight in, just as I was coming along beside a building, they'd stick their leg out or something and I'd go head over.
Oh, them. Goodness.
Yeah. Bullying's not new. It's
no,
just changed. It's changed its format.
Yes, indeed.
But bullying is not new. No. And that's one of the negatives I remember from school. Another negative is that in primary school we used to have these 1/3 pints bottles of milk, and that was fine in winter, they just about froze, but in summer the cream would be so thick and yuck, put me off milk forever.
Yeah.
I don't have any bad memories of negative memories of teachers or anything.
Oh,
I enjoyed school,
yeah,
really enjoyed it, had a lot of fun and learned heaps. When I was 8, my parents, well, I went down to Hampton Rehabilitation Hospital in Melbourne, or just out of Melbourne, for 12 months it was to try and correct the major scoliosis of my spine, put me to bed for 12 months into what they called a double Thomas splint, which was basically the shape of a skeleton, and your legs went into an iron frame and you had plaster boots on your feet and your arms went into arm pieces and they were strapped down. In my case, I had a head strap across, it was perspect up, and virtually that was it for...
You were like that for 12 months?
Yeah, we used to get out, certainly during weekdays, we got out for about an hour of physio a day.
Good.
The rest of it, we were in there. That was the treatment in those days.
What was that like?
Not very nice.
Did you get schooling while you were
yes,
there?
Yes, we were schooled. But we were schooled usually. If you were in a sitting frame, then that was wheeled to the classroom. If you weren't allowed to get up like that, then you were put onto a long pram, perambulator, and that was wheeled into the classroom. They were proper education department teachers. But one of the things that happened with me was because I'd done third form in New South Wales, went down to Victoria for 12 months, they wouldn't recognise that I'd done third form, so I had to repeat third form. Then when I went back to New South Wales the following year, they wouldn't recognise that I'd already done 2 years of third form because the last one was in Victoria. It was a little bit hard on the teachers till they finally put me up into fourth grade, and it really should have been fifth grade.
Did you see your parents much during that 12 months?
I didn't see my father because I went into the... went to the rehab hospital in the January, and he had a very, very major operation, and they removed probably about half of his stomach. He had ulcers. These days they treat them just with a tablet, and those days they operated, and he lost about half of his stomach. He nearly died.
Gosh.
I didn't know any of this until about the March. Mum came down to see me and told me that they had separated, and that in a way didn't surprise me, because the last 12 months hadn't been good at home. Part of the reason was that Dad was sick, but Mum could not, right up until the day she got died, could not cope with anyone being ill. She just couldn't cope with it. Also, part of the reason was that Mum really was a city girl, should never have lived in a little town of about 7,500 people. And the people there, some of them bullied her in that, what did you do that your daughter caught polio?
Oh, what?
Yeah, oh, small town mentality, Judy. And when I first came to Gawler, that wasn't uncommon in some cases.
Good grief.
You know, 40 odd years ago. Yeah. But Mum came about the March and told me that they'd separated, and then and she said that Dad had nearly died. Well, I didn't catch the nearly. And then in the November, by this stage they were going to release me and I could go home, and they'd started sitting me up in a sitting frame and starting to walk again and all of that sort of thing. And one day I was just there in my sitting frame and Dad walked in. Well, a big shock, thinking he was dead.
Yes.
So I went back to Albury with him, or his sister came with him, went back to Albury with him. But one really good thing that happened while I was at Hampton, 1954 was the year the Queen came out.
Yes, sir.
And as Brownies, we were able to go into Government House. We were taken in Ridgeway Pantechnicons.
Oh, right.
And we lined the road of Government House. And I have a photo of me lying in my double Thomas splint in my Brownie uniform, waving the Australian flag.
Oh, that's a fantastic memory.
That was
it?
Good.
Yeah.
And so in the November I went home, and Dad enrolled me at a private Presbyterian girls' school. The education standard was abominable, but the school was set up principally as a boarding school for the daughters of the surrounding areas farmers. And in those days, and we're talking the 1950s, girls from farms were expected to marry farmers, didn't have careers outside their farm or the home or whatever, so the education standard really didn't have to be very good. And I went to first form in that, or in first form as it was called then, and then Dad decided that things really needed to be changed. But what I did like about that school was that there was a choir. There was an elocution choir, a singing choir, elocution choir, and I was able to join them. But there wasn't very much homework, because really it was mainly your crafts, your sewing and those sorts of things.
Domestic arts.
Yes, yeah. Because that's what the women that's what the girls who were going to go back onto the farms would be doing.
That's right.
Yeah, we were taught English and those sorts of things, history and geography. I mean, we were taught the basics, but standard wasn't very good at all. So in 1959, I went over to Wodonga, to the Wodonga High School. And because I went to a Victorian school, although I didn't live in Victoria, I was able to come in under the Victorian Health Department's polio division. And from there on in, I was under them till I left Victoria in 1971. And was able to receive free treatment, free equipment, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that made a huge difference to Dad, because in about 1960, he became a totally permanently incapacitated war vet.
Ah. And he'd been in the Second World War, hadn't
he? Yes, he was a rat of Tobruk.
Oh.
He was in the original Australian contingent that went over. He was in the first lot that went over. And I've still got his badge at home that's got the T on it for Tobruk.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. Oh, that's a treat.
Yeah, so by then he was a TPI pensioner and...
And you were living with him?
Yes. The court, when my parents actually filed for divorce, the court awarded me to Dad in that Mum had got up and said she didn't want me. Now, that sounds a bit harsh, but I can understand it to the point that back in those days, there wasn't a single parent pension.
No.
Mum would have, in fact, she had to go to work. Mm. And from that point of view, I can understand that a few of my friends can't, but from that point of view, and in the long run, Judy, it was the best thing that happened because I think I'd have been a screaming heebie-jeebie wreck if she'd stayed home.
In your childhood, are there any things like books or toys or films or visits to any special places that stand out for you?
Books.
Tell us about them.
My father... as I say, taught me to read before I went to school. And I can still clearly, to this day, when you became five, you could join the public library. You couldn't do it before that. So Dad used to get my books out for me when I was about four. And I remember clearly the first day, the day I turned five, I went and enrolled under my own name. And the books I got out were The Three Gollywogs by Enid Blyton. And I can still remember a phrase from that, from one of the Gollywogs, "Our splits, my sides, nothing." And the other book was Alice in Wonderland.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a big, thick book. Yeah. It had big print, but it was a big, thick book. It was probably a good A4 size.
Wow.
And probably about, 2 inches thick?
Golly.
Yes. And I can still remember that. And I was at the library every week. And Dad was a great... He loved poetry and I learned so many of Henry Lawson, Banjo Paterson.
Still remember them?
I remember some of them, but unless you repeat them fairly often.
Sure.
And Dorothea McKellar and her Australian poems. Mm. And he was a great patriot, so I was very early put onto Alan Marshall's books. I Can Jump Puddles.
That would have had a particular resonance.
It did, but my comment on it to someone afterwards was, so what, I can jump puddles too. But yes, that was good, and I've read all of his books, all of the ones he wrote. And interestingly, he didn't have any less of a hard time than any of us back in those days who was disabled trying to find a job. But eventually we did find them, he did and all of that. Films used to go every Saturday afternoon to the local cinema with my friends.
What did you see?
Oh, Hopalong Cassidy, or as we, all of the cowboy and itchy bums, as we called them back then. It was just a whole group of us used to meet at the theatre on Saturday afternoon. Part of my pocket money was the money to get into the theatre and to buy an ice cream or a bag of lollies. Well, quite often we bought things like Maltesers, mint, and used to just roll them down the aisle. And that was just fun. And we learned a bit of Australian history because you had your movie tone news.
Yes.
And that showed us what was going on around Australia.
That's right.
And I was there at the time that the Snowy Mountain scheme was being built. In fact, went to school with a lot of the kids whose fathers were working on it. And the drowning of Talangata, old Talangata as it's called now,
mm-hmm.
and the removal of all the houses and those that were shops and everything to New Talangata. And that was all on the movie tone news. So we caught up with all of that. And there were two films particularly I went to see with the school. A Queen is Crowned, which was 1953.
That was a coronation.
Yes, and Elizabeth is Queen. And also in those days, that year, we were given a New Testament and Psalms by the education department that had the Queen's crest on it. And somewhere along the line, and I don't know by whom I was given it, but I was given a replica, tiny replica, of the coronation coach and horses. And it was in gold.
Do you still have it?
No, I haven't. It got lost in all my travels. Yeah. Probably broken and then thrown out. But yeah, they're the really good things I remember from that era. But we just had fun. And then in, as I say, in 1959, I went to Wodonga High School, and we had some brilliant teachers there.
Tell me about them.
Teachers who, it was a career, it wasn't just a job. And Mrs. Elwood was our English teacher, and very, very strict on not ending sentences with prepositions. And one thing that still sticks in my mind, similar to, different from, compared with. And even today, I have trouble with books, and I have been known to write to correct reports and give them back to the reporter. But a brilliant English teacher gave me a love of English expression that you just don't see these days. And our geography teacher, Miss Bray, absolutely brilliant. We made paper mache models of continents, the rivers, the mountains, and she also taught us arithmetic. And back in those days, arithmetic and mathematics were two separate subjects. And also in those days, I was going to school with the students from Bonnygilla Migrant Camp, whose parents had come out here for the fathers to work on the Snowy Scheme. And they taught us a lot. I started school in Form 2 or Year 8, I think it is now, at Wodonga High. Those kids came into the year, at the beginning of the year, barely speaking English. By the end of the year, they were in the top five. Not the top 5%, the top five of the class. And
interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and Rainer, and I still remember, Rainer went on and he ducks the class. He went to what was then Duntroon, otherwise he'd have probably gone to the officer school up there now, went to Duntroon, came out as the with the Queen's Sword Award, and went on to become the Australian Army Ambassador to America. Brilliant mind. But the others were no less.
Yes.
And they went home and they did the chores and they did their homework. But I was determined I was going to beat him in something. Absolutely determined.
You?
I beat him in arithmetic. By one mark. I got 100, he got 99.
Well, that's
and I've still got my report book at home.
Still beating
showing me that.
Still beating him.
Yeah. And I really, really enjoyed high school till the final year. And we had a brilliant history teacher, and the final year, no, year, form 5, year 11, we did the Renaissance and Reformation, and our teacher just brought it to life. Absolutely brilliant. They were brilliant teachers, and I'm sure they're around today.
Yes.
But just dedicated.
Yes.
And I had to learn 3 years of French in 1 year.
Gosh.
Because I was put into the general class when we finally went into our streamlines in Form 9 proficiency, and I was put in the general because, as I was told, I was a cripple and wouldn't get a job.
Oh.
And then they decided they put me in the commercial, and that was shorthand typing and that. And then someone said, no, she's too good, put her into professional. Well, by that stage, I had to learn years 1, 2, and 3 French all in the 1 year.
Oh, gosh, how did you go with that?
We had a teacher come home, one of the French teachers from school came home every Monday night. And in first term, I did first and third year French. Second term, I did second and third year French. And then in third term, I put it all together. And I liked French. I went on and did it through to matric.
And she came to your home?
Came to home, yes.
Wow.
On Monday night.
That's dedication.
Yes, yeah.
That's amazing.
And came home for about an hour and a half. And
okay, so high school was your teenage years.
Yes.
What about your social life during that period?
It was fairly good. I was in the church. I went to youth group. Dad drove me everywhere because obviously I couldn't drive myself at that age. But when I was in, I had to wait till I was 18, which was Form 6, Year 12. I was old enough to get my licence, and in those days you just had a test and got your licence, no P's or anything. Dad purchased some hand controls.
Ah.
that we had to wait till I was 18, though, before you could apply for them. And then they had to come from Sydney and had to be put on the car. And I learned to drive. And in October of 63, I was 18 and got my licence. And after that night, I wanted to go out and I asked Dad to take me. He said, "No, you've got your licence, off you go." But I'd been driving back and forward to school, and in those days it was about 11 miles from where we lived in North Albury. By then we'd shifted, lived in North Albury over to school in Wodonga. And so I was driving 22 miles a day through the main street of Albury, all of that sort of thing. So I was getting plenty of practice. And the day I went for my licence, the policeman asked Dad to come in the car because he'd never seen hand controls. And I think he was petrified. And by the time we got back to the police station, you could see the beads of sweat on his forehead.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he didn't even ask me any questions. It was just, "You've passed, here you are."
That must have been very liberating to get your license.
Yes, it was.
Tell us what happened.
Well, it meant I could go anywhere I wanted to, when I wanted to, and all of that. And Dad knew that he didn't have long to live for a variety of reasons. He had cancer by then. He had very, very bad emphysema, for which I blame cigarettes. And yes, simply because he smoked and he used to roll his own, but when the ready rolls came in, the ready maids, his consumption tripled.
Yeah.
Just absolutely tripled. It was so easy to smoke. But he was in a lot of pain, and I think it partly killed that. He was consuming a box of Becks, remember Becks?
Oh, do I ever?
Yes, yeah. He was consuming box
awful
of them a day.
Awful poison.
Oh, yes, yeah. And everything combined. He knew he didn't have very long to live. So in the last couple of years of his life, he ensured that I understood finance and banking. I had a very good understanding of saving, not spending everything I earned. And in year six, I applied for a Commonwealth scholarship to go to Teachers College, but was told very clearly that because I was a cripple, I wouldn't pass the medical test. So I tended to drop my bundle a bit. I didn't do as well as my
test. Must have been so demoralising.
It was, but it was life back in those days, and nothing was our way at all.
Yeah, but what a wonderful man your father was.
He was a visionary. He was a real visionary.
He was.
Yes. And as soon as I got my licence, he signed the car over to me so that if at any time he suddenly went, I had the car, it was mine. He had a little battered old utility, little Bedford Ute. And we all used to just sit in the back of it and he'd drive it around. It was fun. He loved his garden. And everywhere we went, in the first house we were in, the whole of the backyard was fruit trees and vegetables. Oh. We were totally self-sufficient.
It was just the two of you in the home, in the house?
Yeah, basically, from the age of eight, yeah.
Good gracious.
And when we were still at home, when there was the three of us, when Dad grew all the veggies, Mum used to preserve them in the old Vicola bottling outfit.
Yes, I remember.
Yes, but when we went up to the other house, it was just the two of us. And it wasn't so much in the veggie line then, it was more flowers. Dad grew them and he got a lot of pleasure out of that. And the vegetables would have been too much hard work.
So what about your social life during this time?
Mainly church, youth group,
mm-hmm.
School. We had our end of term, and it was only three terms then. We had our end of term socials and things. Most of it was family.
Yeah.
Every Saturday night we went to Dad's sister's, my aunt's, and that Dad and Auntie Lil and Uncle Bill would play sixpenny poker, and I used to play every so often, and won enough money every so often to buy a little transistor radio that I wanted or a few other things.
Oh.
But Dad's idea was that if you want something, you save for it. There just wasn't money to hand out. So I saved. Of course, by the time I'd saved for it, the fad had gone. But with this threepenny poker it was, I did save enough to buy one of the first transistor radios that ever came out.
Really?
And that was great fun. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed music, and we had a big stereogram. It had the radio, the record player, And we had a lot of records.
What sort of music?
Mainly some of the old crooners, John Charles Thomas, Patrick O'Hagan, Father Sidney McEwen, Richard Tauber, Richard Crooks. Dad was a crooner. He was quite a good singer.
What about you?
I'm a messy soprano. And I remember when I first went to the choir out here at Lindock that I'm involved with, that I went in and the leader asked me, did I know what I was? And I said, a messy soprano, and her eyebrows just about shot up. I can reach top E. Anything over that's a squeak. Yeah, lots of music. I listened to the radio a lot. And then when I was 12, we moved down. Dad had a job for a couple of years as caretaker of the local council caravan park, which was on the banks of the river. And that was fun. I lived down there. And that's where I first learned to swim. And we had a jetty that went out from the bank out to the river. And I used to crawl up onto it and pull myself along and then just fall into the water.
So you were self-taught? You didn't get...
No, I was basically self-taught at that stage.
Right.
And
still on crutches at this
point. Oh, yeah, still walking at that stage.
Still walking,
yeah. I didn't go into a wheelchair till about the 1980s.
Right.
And then...
So that was your first swimming experience in the...
No. I'd been in water a lot prior to that, but never been... other than just splashing around,
yeah.
I'd never done any proper swimming. Hydrotherapy had been used since I was about 18 months when I first went to Dame Jean McNamara. She was a great one for that. And I think that's where my love of the water came from. And a few times I nearly drowned in the big pool.
Oh, gosh.
I went into the big pool and I'd hold on to the edge and could just go along the edge. I must have been only, Mum was still home, so I was under 8. And I remember one day clearly someone jumped in and jumped on my head.
Oh, my
God. And I went down and I came up again, but I came up out away from the wall. And in those days, I wasn't swimming. And Dad jumped the fence and put his hand out, and I could just reach his longest finger. And he pulled me back into the side. He had an absolute fear of water because when he was young, he'd nearly drowned in the farm dam.
Goodness.
And he used to turn white just to go and have a shower. He hated water, anything above paddling.
Gosh.
And, but didn't stop me. I just still went into the water and that, and in the river without really swimming. But I'd float down and then I'd pull myself back up.
Okay.
Along the edge.
Sort of dog paddle at that
Yeah,
stage.
Dog paddle my way up, clawing at the dirt of the bank of the river. And I went back 40 years after that to see the river. And the jetty would have been about 5 metres up from the water.
Gosh.
Because the river had just didn't have
yes.
any water in it.
Gosh.
So
was that the beginning of your interest in swimming?
Probably the beginning of being able to swim properly.
Mm.
And then when I went down to Melbourne in 1964, permanently after Dad died, I joined the local wheelchair sports club. And they had a swimming group going that practiced twice a week. And that's where the competition aspect really all started. I was staying at a hostel in Melbourne then. And it was set up for the physically disabled who had jobs.
What was your job?
I, by that stage, had finished at Tech College on the commercial course, shorthand typing, commercial English. Bookkeeping to trial balance stage and the old-fashioned switchboard where you plugged everything in. And, that was 1964, so I was still training then. I was getting the training pension, which was the equivalent of the invalid pension, and finished my training. Then in 1965, got a job at the Victorian Botanical Gardens.
Doing well.
Secretarial stenography work, and worked for the director of the gardens there.
That would have been interesting.
Oh, that was brilliant. Lunchtime, she'd just go out into the garden, and the only trouble with that was that he didn't use my shorthand often enough for me to keep it up, so that when he did want it,
It's got a bit stale.
Yes, yeah. And I didn't do it very much, but I stayed there for that year, 65. Then in 66 I went up to Sydney and joined the Commonwealth Public Service at Paddington Army Barracks, or Victoria Barracks, its formal name, again as a stenographer, and got it back up to speed by then and was able to use it a bit. So basically typing in shorthand in those days. And then what was then Division 4 became Division 3, and we all became admin officers or clerks, clerical officers, admin officers, whatever the metamorphosis was each time.
Yeah.
And I stayed with the Department of Defence until they all... the Department of Army, till I went back... I came back to Melbourne. By then I'd met up with my mother again and...
How did that go?
It was never a good... it was okay, but it was never a close relationship. No. She'd been gone for 11 years of my life. Yeah. She'd remarried my... stepfather, I liked him. He was very, very nice. Very like my own father.
Yeah.
Very like him. They'd both been to the war, all of that.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed his company. And but I used to go over to Mum and Gerald's about a couple of times a week and have a meal or something. And one night I was over there, I'd been scratching and scratching and scratching. And Mum, what's the matter? I said, I've got a bit of a rash, Mum. She said, let me have a look. So put my head down between my knees, and she pulled up my shirt. She said, just a moment, and I'll get something that'll take the itch out of it. And next thing, I just about went through the ceiling. She'd slapped a handful of methylated spirits on. It took the itch out. But it turned out that it was shingles.
Oh, my goodness.
And, and I didn't get treated for it for that episode. But, it was a fractured relationship, and... She was still a bit funny because whenever she introduced me or spoke about me to anyone, I was her niece. Until Gerald put his foot down very, very firmly and said, this is not... And in front of one of her friends, which was probably the only way that would stop it, he said, she's not your niece, she's your daughter.
Gosh, that must have been hard for you.
It was just who she was, Judy. I think I accepted a lot of things.
Yes, you must have.
That,
yeah.
I remember them, but I just sort of think, well, that's who she was.
Yes, I guess. I guess.
And really, it didn't affect me. I wasn't living with them.
No,
any
true.
Of that. So I was with Army back then, and then 1970, early 71, I went up to live in Sydney and went to the Department of Navy at Garden Island Dockyard. And that was interesting. At one stage I was in charge of their workers' compensation section.
Gosh.
And in those days, the workers had to bring in a doctor's certificate to say they couldn't work. And if they didn't bring that in, there was no money for them for that fortnight. And everything still was cash.
Yes.
So we had to have those certificates by Wednesday so the money could be prepared for them to pick it up on Friday. Well, this guy came in, and a lot of the stevedore workers were Maltese. They'd come out as migrants from Malta, where there was a British shipyard.
That's right, yeah.
So they came to Garden Island Dockyard to work on the naval ships. And this guy came in, he had a walking stick. He came in and he said, money. And they, a lot of them couldn't speak much English. Money. And I looked up, no money. No certificate, no money. I want my money. I said, no money, no certificate, no money. And he raised his walking stick and slammed it down on the desk and said, I want my money. So I just picked up my stick and slammed it down on the desk and said, no certificate, no money. And everyone in the office just looked. But it cured him. I got a certificate every fortnight.
That is a fan. Oh, what a story. That's great.
And I was there, and we actually had pickets on the gate into work. But I was also there when the Queen came out to open the Opera House.
Ah.
And I was sharing a house with two others in Coogee at the time, or Maroubra, which is the next suburb. And because I worked on the island, we were able to go on the island out to the point. And we could hear it. It was broadcast very loudly. We could hear her opening it, and we could see the fireworks, and that was magnificent.
Oh, what a
absolutely magnificent! We were able to see the yacht cruise down the harbour that she and the Duke and that were in. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, what memories.
Yes.
What fantastic
memories. It was great.
Yeah.
And then that was early 71 to 77 when I came over here to get married, and I transferred back to Army at Keswick for a few months, then went out to DSTO, and by then it was all Department of Defence.
Uh-huh.
Oh. And I was a civilian, and that was fine, DSTO, and then I ended up at the RAF base, but I was with the Department of Defence for 41 years.
Really?
Yeah, got to the top of the middle management level.
Well done.
And then in 1997, when I had cancer and on chemo, I asked to come down a couple of levels because I was managing a $17 million budget across three states at that stage.
Goodness me.
I just didn't want the pressure.
Very stressful.
Yes, yeah. I came down, but fortunately had been at that level long enough that I could keep the superannuation up at the higher
that's
level.
Good. That's good.
And all of it. It's just, I've had a great life, Judy, a great life. Yes, it's had its ups and downs, but...
it's made you a very strong person, hasn't it?
It has, it has. But yeah. I thank my father for that, because I'd go home from school and say, the kids bullied me. He'd say, well... sort of accept that is life.
Yes, you've got a lot to thank him for.
Oh yes, he was
wonderful,
a real visionary.
Man. Yeah, wonderful.
And insisted I went to Year 12.
Yes.
Absolutely insisted on that. And he always said, when anything around finance came up, do you want it or do you need it? If you need it, something for school or something like that, an excursion. And there weren't many in those days. We went down and saw a couple of Shakespeare plays at Wangaratta, which was about 40 miles away, that the Wangaratta High School was putting on in years 5 and 6. Still don't like Shakespeare. there was always money for school things.
Yeah.
If I wanted it, I had to save for it. And as I say, the fat had gone by the time I'd done that. But education was prime.
Yes.
Absolutely
prime. He sowed some very important seeds, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
And to make me as independent as he possibly could.
Yeah, what a legacy.
Yeah. And that has just stood me in brilliant stead for the rest of my
life.
Certainly
has.
Yeah, certainly made me strong and to fight for myself. And there are times when probably my fighting for what I believe is right is... and you've seen me in action on that, has not gone as PC as it should have, but I've got there.
Yes, absolutely.
And got there.
Absolutely. Mm. And I think, you know, well, I admire, and I know a lot of people admire you for your courage and your strength and your integrity.
This interview is available for download for purposes of educational research. We expect that any creative written or electronic work derived from the recording gives due credit to the interviewee, interviewer, and GBA.